You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This episode of Into the Night is brought to you by our loyal listeners and followers. Fazbear Entertainment appreciates your viewership and those who support the show by commenting, sharing, and subscribing. If you wish to support this broadcast, please consider checking out the official merch store and Patreon for more information.
This episode is a continuation of our Security Breach audiobook series. If you haven't watched from the beginning, we recommend starting at episode 26, Security Breach, and listening to all episodes up to this point to know the full context of the storyline so far. Rot. That was the first thought that surfaced when Gregory finally came to. Not just the stench of mold and decay that permeated the air around him, but the insidious thought of how easy it would be to simply lie here and let himself waste away. Gregory had never been one to shy away from a challenge. In fact, he thrived on games that pushed him to his limits. But this wasn't an exhilarating arcade shooter or a lively pinball cabinet. In a single harrowing night, he had been hunted, manhandled, knocked unconscious, cut, bruised, and left reeling in a nightmare that defied all logic. Injuries at the Mega Pizzaplex were nothing new. Countless people had met grim fates within the fortified walls of Fazbear Entertainment's sprawling domain, a monolith of garish lights, clattering arcades, and feckless distractions, all served with a side of gluttonous food, scarcely more real than its animatronic mascots. Strange. Gregory couldn't tell if it was the repeated blows to his head or the hazy, disoriented state from being buried under a mound of refuse, but fragments of memory seemed to surface, ghostly and unbidden. He could remember more about his life before being discovered hidden within Freddy's chest cavity. Faint recollections clawed their way back to him, the countless disappearances tied to the Mega Pizzaplex. Faint recollections clawed their way back to him, the countless disappearances tied to the Mega Pizzaplex. Missing children, vanished workers. It was an unsettling common theme. Fazbear's horror-themed video games had long played on those ideas. But Gregory now wondered if truth truly was stranger than fiction, or if fiction simply held up a mirror to a grim and horrifying reality. Vanessa, or Vanny, she had to be more involved in whatever was happening here. Fazbear Entertainment might be deceitful, incredulous in its details, and shameless in cutting corners to turn a profit. But nothing Gregory had endured so far suggested they intended anything more sinister than that. Vanny, though, she couldn't be acting alone. The disappearances were too numerous, too methodical. Children vanishing, workers disappearing without explanation, new attractions hyped for months, only to be dismantled shortly after their debut. The Buddytronic Boutique, Freddy's Fortress, the Storyteller Tree, Boxy's Log Ride, the Roleplay Auditorium, and those state-of-the-art VR booths. It couldn't all be coincidence. There had to be a connection between the shuttered attractions and the missing people. No, Vanny couldn't be the sole architect of this nightmare. She was just a security guard, head of security, perhaps. But even that didn't give her the means to orchestrate something this sprawling. Someone had to be helping her, covering her tracks, and hiding the bodies. Speaking of which, Gregory shifted his body, dislodging some of the weight pressing down on him. Once he felt confident he could bear the remaining load, he planted his hands against the grime-coated cement floor and pushed himself upright. Taking in his surroundings, he realized he was in a graveyard of discarded plastic containers, torn food wrappers, and decaying scraps of ingredients. The ghost of their original aromas, sickly sweet marinara and earthly vegetables, were now soured and overpowered by the rancid stench of sewage. The fetid odor was amplified by the unsettling soundtrack of scurrying rats that echoed faintly through the dim, oppressive space. The walls around him were piled high with refuse, forming a claustrophobic barrier. Looking up, he spotted the gaping hole he had fallen through, with garbage still trickling down from the void above. A single overhead light flickered weakly, casting uneven shadows across the decayed expanse. The only other light glowed faintly above what Gregory desperately hoped was an exit, a beacon in the back of this grim and suffocating tomb. Gregory scuttled his way down the mound of refuse he had been perched upon, but froze mid-step when a flash of hot white light flared from behind a heap of metal scrap. Instinctively, he slowed his pace, though every step sent an unrelenting crunch of garbage echoing through the air. No matter how carefully he placed his feet, the cacophony of his movements betrayed him, rendering his attempts at stealth futile. Creeping closer to the mound, he stole a quick glance around the jagged cluster of metal and immediately recoiled. His breath hitched as he caught sight of a grotesque, yet disturbingly familiar figure. An animatronic chicken crafted from vibrant white and pink plastic. It was unmistakably Glamrock Chica. The last time he saw her, she had been crushed so thoroughly by the trash compactor that her eyes and mouth had popped grotesquely from her metal skull. Those parts still clung awkwardly within her shattered faceplate, so much so that even a child younger than him could have pried them free without effort. Her body was a ruin of spider-webbed cracks stretching across every surface. The paint scraped away in jagged streaks from her legs and face. Her torso was riddled with gaping holes, one of which spanned from shoulder to shoulder, leaving her looking as though she might collapse into herself at any moment. The plastic casing on her left arm was entirely missing, except for the wrist, while a gaping void in her right forearm laid bare the intricacies of her exposed endoskeleton. Even her hair, bow tie, earrings, legs, and feet bore smaller fractures, making them appear as brittle as old porcelain. But most importantly, she wasn't moving. Her eyes laid still, void of the unnerving mechanical tracking that had haunted him before. There was no hum of a battery pack, no telltale glow or sign of power source to reanimate her. Gregory felt a flicker of relief deep within him. His back muscles relaxed as if he just offloaded the straps of a backpack filled with cement blocks. The nightmare wasn't over, but at least one Glamrock was finally out of the hunt. Gregory was about to inspect the back of her fractured metal skull when his foot struck something dense and metallic, sending a sharp clang echoing through the grimy space. Glancing down, his cautious optimism twisted into a sick sense of satisfaction. His inquisitive expression gave way to a full-blown grin. It was Chica's beak. He remembered knocking it off in the desperate chaos when she had tried to drag him into the trash compactor. Now here it was, lying at his feet, astonishingly undamaged despite the fall. This was perfect. Gregory recalled the schematics he'd seen in parts and service. All the Glamrock animatronics had been outfitted with experimental upgrades, features deemed just hazardous enough to skirt the edge of practicality. Chica's voice box had been one of those modifications. Flicking his wrist, Gregory brought up his FAS watch and began scrolling through his database. He scanned the reports with mounting anticipation, and to his relief, the files were still accessible.
Maintenance report. Chica Voice Box System, Mark 2. Report filed by Engineering Team Lead Sebastian.
Right, listen up. Don't let her sing. This newfangled experimental voice box is an absolute disaster. Hear me, disaster. Jesus, it's somewhere between metal scrap and a garbage disposal and one of them TikTok influencers. When she tries to harmonize, she's hidden frequencies that have no business existing, throwing the other bots into a right frenzy. Now the staff bots are dropping trays, bashing into the walls all around, and causing a commotion that led to several guest injuries. And of course, now HR's telling me that we got 12 lawsuits filed by some lot calling themselves the Parents Union Against Unsafe Atrocities and Mechanical Abominations. Catchy name, isn't it? You put the first letters of all those words together and you got the Powawama. Alright, here's my advice to the uppers. Bin this experiment and stick the old voice box back in her already. Who cares if she sounds like a valley girl? At least she wasn't shattering eardrums and making robots' heads explode.
Gregory muted the voice log and bent down, carefully pocketing the voice box. If he could reconnect with Freddy in parts and service, he might be able to swap out Freddy's malfunctioning voice box with Chica's. At least, he hoped he could. That robotic announcer voice had been a guiding beacon through the chaos. So if there was a procedure to replace the voice boxes via the computer, all he needed to do was load the program and follow the instructions. He pocketed the voice box and moved toward the far end of the chamber, stepping cautiously through the open doorway and into a larger space. A tube loomed ahead, sewage rushing violently from an open pipe embedded in the wall. Garbage still piled high around the area, but it did form a makeshift platform, offering just enough footing for him to cross. This wasn't the usual heap of food waste. Instead, broken sinks, toilets, and industrial washing and drying machines lay scattered about, their remnants adding a sharp metallic edge to the refuse surrounding him. Coming across another security door, Gregory exhaled in relief as it creaked open with a groan. Beyond it lay a narrow catwalk, bordered by a yellow balustrade. The room was bathed in a sickly yellow glow, cast by several dim light bulbs jutting out from the walls. Above, a haphazard tangle of pipes formed a makeshift ceiling, shielding Gregory from the constant threat of falling debris. Clumps of dirt, rusted metal fragments, and even a few defunct staff bots hung limply between the pipes. They were reaching out to the point that they would have grazed the hair of any adult wandering below the surface. Gregory flicked on his flashlight. Across the room, just below the catwalk and opposite of his position, he spotted a small landing with a half-circle cavernous opening. On the adjacent wall, barely visible in the dim light, was a faded arrow, its paint chipped and worn, pointing toward a word barely legible beneath it. Surface. Finally, a sense of direction. But the landing was too far for him to reach by jumping. His flashlight beam drifted across the black abyss, revealing what appeared to be a makeshift bridge. Rusted metal scrap was jammed against the pipe wall, with rotting wood planks haphazardly nailed into the twisted metal framework, forming an unstable path to the far side of the room. Definitely not up to code, even by Fazbear Entertainment's deplorable standards. Of course, because things couldn't get easier for Gregory, so why should things start to get simple now? He absolutely loved detours through this excursion in the Pizzaplex. The pathway was blocked by a metal gate. Given the dripping sewage and the moist, stagnant air, the metal was too slick for him to try climbing or swinging around. But thankfully, instead of a padlock, it had an electrical lock. All it needed was power, and the cord leading to it was clearly nailed along the walls. Gregory followed the cord to an offshoot corridor branching off from the catwalk. The shape of the passage mirrored the cylindrical design of the tunnel he was trying to reach, but at least the catwalk stretched onward to this cavern. The interior of the tunnel, however, was noticeably different. It felt mortuary, a stark contrast to the rest of the Pizzaplex's underbelly. The walls were cracked, faded orange and red bricks exposed beneath layers of grime. Among the flow of refuse, discarded staff bots lay in heaps. At the far end of the corridor, a dam of black and gray scrapwork had formed, an overflow of garbage and debris blocking the pathway ahead. Continuing his tracking of the power cord, Gregory weaved around pipes, navigating the cramped spaces along the walls. He took a right, then a left, finally emerging on the opposite side of the wall from the catwalk. The metal bridge stretched on ahead, this section of the path illuminated only by a faint amber glow of a single dangling light bulb. But Gregory came to an abrupt halt when something caught his eyes. Two pinprick white pupils were peeking from behind the cracked brickwork of the wall. They weren't moving, yet they seemed to be staring directly at him, unblinking. A chill ran through Gregory, his legs tensing involuntarily. His body ached, the remnants of his brutal fall from the trash compactor still leaving him sore and vulnerable. Gregory cautiously directed his flashlight beam upward, following the faint glimmer of the white irises. As the light settled, he realized they belonged to a staff bot, lodged behind a pile of refuse crammed into the wall, but this wasn't a model he recognized. Moving closer, Gregory's unease deepened as he finally understood what was wrong with it. The staff bot had been desecrated, defaced with cruel graffiti. Black tear-like streaks dripped from its empty eye sockets, where the white irises barely peeked through. Its body was marred with dirt and scratch marks, its torso scrawled with a message in the same black ink that tainted its face. In your dreams. It was bizarre, utterly macabre, yet the staff bot appeared dormant, offering no movement or alarm in response to his presence. Gregory, undeterred, continued as though walking through a particularly dangerous neighborhood. Head low, pace steady. The bot took no notice of him, its vacant stare unfazed. Once past the defiled automaton, the weight of his claustrophobia finally lifted, replaced by a welcome sense of space. The cylindrical corridor expanded into a vast two-story chamber, its concrete walls supported by thick, weathered pillars. The dim orange glow from small bulbs barely illuminated the pillars they were attached to, casting long shadows that stretched across the room. Faded text, almost unrecognizable, was spray-painted above them. B3. So, he was on the third level below the Pizzaplex? The utility tunnels Freddy had shown him at the beginning of the night must have been labeled B1. With his map still in hand, thanks to the insufferable map bot, Gregory now had a semblance of direction. If he could make his way back to those utility tunnels, he could find his way to the surface. But first, he needed to find a way to ascend. Surveying the open space, there wasn't much to see. Fazbear Entertainment's operations seemed to be in full swing, with several parts and service bins scattered around. But the numerous discarded staff bot heads and body parts made it clear that this was likely a dumping ground for defective robots. It made some twisted sense. Fazbear Entertainment, being a leader in robotics, would undoubtedly want to keep their trade secrets locked away. But it still felt impetuous, like a decision driven more by negligence than practicality. After all, even if you owned the landfill, throwing away robots seemed wasteful. the thought lingered in his mind. He recalled Glamrock Freddy's words about how much he missed Glamrock Bonnie. Freddy had spoken that Bonnie's absence was more than a mere programming error. It was a loss, and no other robot who wore shell could replace the friend that was taken away. But if Bonnie was broken, why didn't they just slap a new shell over a new robot? It wasn't as if Fazbear Entertainment cared about Glamrock's individuals, sentient or not. Disposing of staff bots like this was enough proof to confirm that. The public likely wouldn't also notice a replacement, so why go so far as to replace Bonnie with Monty, the objectively worse animatronic? It made no sense. After a minute of searching, Gregory finally spotted the power source connected to the gate. It was a generator, similar to the ones he'd seen in the Superstar daycare. He approached it cautiously, his fingers moving with practiced precision as he fiddled with the knobs and flipped the power switch. A soft rumble vibrated through the air, and the generator's light flashed green, signaling that the power had been restored. All that was left to do was retrace his steps, and he'd be one step closer to the surface. Gregory's ears prickled at a new sound emerging from the cacophony of dripping pipes and low moans of metal and falling debris. A mechanical and a technophile sound, like a PC coughing up its virtual lungs. He pressed himself tightly against a half wall, his breath steady despite the rush of panic threatening to surge. Footsteps drew closer, slow and erratic. He can hear them clearly now. It was metal scraping against concrete. Was Monty and Roxy searching for him down here? He didn't know how long he was out, and perhaps Chica could have alerted the whole band to his location. The daycare attendant seemed to be capable of a similar feat. But this didn't sound like Monty or Roxy. The footsteps weren't as heavy as the metal gator, nor could he hear the constant affirmations of Roxy. All that was there was metallic screeching. A metal foot staggered beside him. A cracked orange tri-toed foot with painted on pink tiger striped stockings. Another staggered foot, crossing the other in a zombie shamble with a matching light green stocking. It was Glamrock Chica. She was still alive? After all of that, she was still kicking? How? She still appeared damaged. Her walking was little more than a staggered limp, where every step leapt out a celebratory spark of white flame, crying out from the abuse of metal. But even worse than her gait was her head. The thing was on backwards, twisted at an unnatural angle. It spun wildly around like a lighthouse beacon, flicking erratically as if searching for a signal that no longer existed. Her left eye, cracked but somehow still functional, also flickered with an eerie light, while the right was locked in a permanent gaze toward the ceiling, unblinking and dead. Her voice, if it could even be called that, was a hollow, mechanical rasp, regurgitating nothing but garbled static as she wandered, aimless and broken. There was no purpose in her movement, no clarity to her actions, only the restless search for something, anything, to latch onto. Gregory didn't hesitate. The moment she veered wide enough, he slipped behind her, moving with the quiet grace of a predator. His pulse hammered in his chest as he sprinted back the way he came, weaving through the twisted labyrinth of pipes. His feet moved swiftly across the unstable metal catwalk, each step carrying him closer to the gate. He slammed his hands against the unlock button, and the gate's lock clicked open with a hollow metallic sound. Without a second thought, he slammed the gate shut behind him, though he knew it wouldn't be a permanent barrier. Chica was relentless, but if she was coming after him, every extra second to hide was one more he wasn't about to waste. He made his way to the landing, his breath shallow and quick as the tension began to ebb. Flicking on his flashlight, he cast a shaky beam over the dilapidated bridge ahead. The planks were narrow and uneven, a treacherous walkway that demanded careful balance if the wooden planks didn't snap from his weight. He would have to shovel his feet, keeping low to avoid falling off. There were no guardrails, no safety net. So if he fell, he turned his flashlight toward the abyss, which in turn evaporated his beam of light after a few meters. Gregory shook his head. He had come this far, facing off against metallic, abominable, intelligent robots that looked like cartoons, and one really deranged woman with a bunny fetish. He wasn't about to let gravity claim him now, not after all he'd endured. Though, he had to admit, gravity had already scored a few hits. The dull, persistent ache in his torso was a constant reminder of his earlier tumble through the trash compactor. With a shaky breath, Gregory turned off his flashlight. The dim light in the room was enough to guide him now. He placed his foot carefully on the first plank, testing it with gently applied pressure. It creaked under his weight, but held firm. He shifted his weight fully onto it, then brought his other foot up. No protest from the beam this time. Good. Gregory moved with precision and caution. One sidestep, dragging his left leg. One sidestep, drag his left leg. One sidestep, drag his what if he fell? Gregory cringed at the intrusive thought. He shook his head again and tried to clear his thoughts. No, he needed to think of something else. Video games. He loved video games. Freddy looked like he liked him too. That was something. Gregory started cataloging the games he would introduce to Freddy. He doubted the bear would enjoy horror games. Definitely not those. No, he had to avoid those entirely. Maybe something more peaceful, like Animal Crossing. Though Gregory had never been a huge fan of those games himself. Too slow, too serene. He reached the third beam. Two more to go. How about action story games? He watched a few Let's Plays of Gears of War and Army of Two, but those were too violent, too brutal. Probably not Freddy's speed. Maybe something wackier, like Astrobot or Kirby. Those were fun, lighthearted. God, he was really limited by how innocent Freddy was. And with that acknowledged, he took the final step off the last beam and onto the solid concrete of the landing. Perfect. He glanced behind him, but the catwalk remained silent. No sign of Chica. He doubted she could make it across the gap, especially with the damage she'd already taken. Still, Gregory couldn't shake the feeling that she wasn't out of the game yet. After all, he thought she was finished before, and looked how that turned out. The possibility of her finding another way to get to him didn't seem too far-fetched. Now running through the narrowing corridor, the walls seemed to close in around Gregory. The sickly yellow-green hue of the lighting gradually shifting into an almost otherworldly violet white. The color change was subtle, but it carried with it a growing sense of unease, as if the very atmosphere was bending to something far darker than the mundane threat he'd already faced. As the space opened up, he realized he was in a towering vertical cylinder. The tower was dominated by a spiraling ramp that coiled around the edges like a serpent, leading ever upward. From the base, where he stood, the air was thick enough that a rolling fog was present. Peering down from the gated edges, an esoteric violet glow clung to the walls and danced across the debris-strewn floor, How deep did this place go? Looking upward, far above the cavernous maw of the room's ceiling, a stark juxtaposition of jagged metal work and cracked concrete, like the teeth of some ancient industrial beast. Pale light cascaded down from the surface, fragmented and uneven, casting long, skeletal shadows across the walls. The floor of the ramp is a graveyard of broken machinery and discarded remnants of some forgotten purpose. Trash and debris spill from the upper levels, scattered amongst bins filled with dismembered staff-bot bodies. To Gregory's side, B3 marked his position, etched coldly into the metal paneling beside a heavy gate. Following the spiraling ramp with his gaze, Gregory could see its ascent terminate 2 stories above, where an entrance marked B1 teased at his freedom. This is episode 41, Dumpster Diving. Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The deeper Gregory descended into the bowels of the mega pizzaplex, an unsettling truth crystallized. Something far more sinister than staff bots or Fazbear employees lurked in the shadows. And it wasn't just merely the ever-present mice and roaches who seemed locked into a frenzied competition for the scraps of stale food and refuse scattered about. No, something else was down here. Something far darker. The size of the place alone was enough to accommodate hidden squatters. People, perhaps, living in the Labyrinthian underbelly, unnoticed by the rest of the world. The sheer expanse of this decaying fortress left Gregory wondering whether the rumors surrounding Afton Robotics' abandoned underground complexes had roots in something much more real as well, something far more tangible. As he ventured further through this grim catacomb of rotten moss, Gregory's eyes caught glimpses of disturbingly human markers. Makeshift beds piled with greasy stained pizza boxes and dim flickering lights. Some were the remnants of castaway Christmas lights strung carelessly across the walls, while the others were shoddy, novelty lamps in the shape of one of the glam rock bandmates. Vanny also had a makeshift bed space in Phazerblast, so these could be more of her hideouts, but that explanation didn't account for the sheer scale of the structures rising from the debris. Someone, or something, had been meticulously rearranging the garbage, dismantling discarded staff bots, and crafting intricate, grotesque constructs that defied any logical explanation. This was no accident of nature. It was clear and deliberate. At one point, Gregory encountered a gate that forced him to retrace his steps, winding back into an alcove along the spiral ramp in search of another generator to power the electromagnetic lock. Initially, the past seemed no different from the rest of the decaying labyrinth. Brick walls, sagging pipes, and the ever-present mound of discarded garbage. The cord led him toward a gaping hole in the wall, large enough for Monty or Frey to squeeze through, into an alcove where a rickety bridge of decaying planks stretched across what could only be described as a grotesque mound of refuse and bile. The putrid mass of wet slop and sagging cardboard boxes was wedged between layers of dirt, grime, and mold. The walls and ceiling supported by splintered wooden beams that gave an entire area the ominous feel of a long-abandoned mineshaft. The entrance to this macabre den was not unguarded. A twisted hive of defiled staff bots lay entombed within the very walls, their grotesque visages frozen in a mocking, nightmarish display, each one bearing the same graffiti-like face, black eyes, white irises, and sharp, jagged teeth scrawled in crude strokes. As Gregory inched closer to the bridge, a series of mechanical clinks echoed from below, the groan of servos straining into the rhythm that sent a shiver up his spine. He directed his flashlight downward, and his stomach lurched at the sight. More staff bots lay in the pit beneath him, their weak arms outstretched, their singular wheel chassis design rendering them incapable of climbing free from their grim prison. Each of these twisted, malfunctioning machines silently reached toward him. Whether it was a plea for help or an accusatory gesture from something trapped and forgotten, Gregory couldn't say. Gregory held no sympathy for the Glamrock animatronics, bar Freddy, of course. The others had all tried to kill him, and they were nothing more than puppets bound to the whims of a deeply disturbed woman. They'd get what was coming to them, every last one of them. Yet as he stood there, peering down at the dejected, disheveled forms below, something gnawed at him. These machines had been left to rot, abandoned in the suffocating depths of the Pizzaplex, their purpose long forgotten. They were unable to escape their fate, locked in the internal cycle of their own programming, doomed to exist until their power inevitably dwindled to nothing. A strange, unsettling pang tightened in his chest. In some twisted way, he almost felt sorry for them. But if they were unaware of their impending death, could they truly be said to live at all? Gregory didn't have the answer, nor should he, after all. He was just a kid. But as he stood in the midst of so much discarded detritus, buried deep below the surface, a sense of melancholy washed over him. This wasn't merely waste in the sense of spoiled food or forgotten refuse. It was the other kind of waste. The forgotten merchandise that didn't sell, the malfunctioning machines that could have been repurposed, salvaged, and given new life. It was just so wasteful, and Gregory couldn't help but notice, all too ironic yet fitting. How beautiful is it that Freddy Fazbear's Mega Pizzaplex, the brightest and joyous place on Earth, is built upon a foundation of darkness, where the only denizens within are death, decay, and destitution. Once he finally got the generator back on through the labyrinth of refuse and retraced his steps back to the gate, he made his way up the spiraling ramp. As he ascended the ramp, he occasionally peered through the gaps in the walls, his eyes catching glimpses of rooms choked with waste and decay. Each of these makeshift landfills held remnants of destroyed staff bots, bodies torn asunder, left to rot like forgotten husks. But as he climbed higher, something peculiar caught his attention. Wandering robots, old versions of the Glamrock animatronics, along with a few mascots he couldn't name, shuffled aimlessly through the muck. Their movements were jerky, aimless, like the husks of forgotten ghosts, clinging to some phantom version of purpose. much like the defiled staff bots. These machines barely had the faintest glimmer of power, or perhaps a more fitting word, life, behind their cracked plastic eyes. Two tiny pinpricks of white lights flickered faintly, like stars in a mechanical void. In the oppressive gloom of their mechanical tomb, Gregory could only spot them for the subtle motion of those pale dots, slowly rising and falling, lost in the abyss. Once he reached the pinnacle of the rising spiral incline, he was thankfully greeted by an already unlocked door leading to a simple platform with ascending staircase. Finally, a simple process. Climbing up the concrete stairs, Gregory couldn't help but notice that the trash didn't seem to recede even from this area. The stench here in such a tight space was even more pungent than before. According to the faded iconography on the wall, he was nearing a parking area meant for the Fazbear maintenance crew, but when he approached the stairway that should have led him to an employee entrance, it was fortified by a blockade of black trash bags packed so high and tight they were close to bursting. Fortunately, the stairs weren't his only option. Another doorway loomed ahead, leading deeper into the parking infrastructure. Gregory pushed open the door, then swiftly swung it back towards him just inches from closing with a slam. He peered through the crack he made and locked his eyes onto the bright beam of a flashlight, cutting through the darkness and scanning the area. The light swept across a forklift, its worn exterior speaking of long hours buried in the refuse of the underground. The beam of light was drawing nearer, the unmistakable hum of rubber wheels spinning, echoing through the air. Gregory's heart raced, every muscle in his body tensing as the sound grew louder and closer. To his surprise, it was a staff bot. Not that seeing staff bot patrols were unusual, but it was the fact that it wasn't the normal staff bots. This was one of the grimy, dirty, and defaced staff bots, graffitied with black paint to make it look like it came from a nightmare. Yet, absurdly, it still clutched a flashlight in one hand, and perched atop its battered head was a Fazbear security hat, completely unaware, or perhaps uncaring, of the grotesque transformation it had undergone. That wasn't the only thing that was off. Peering into the room a little deeper, Gregory could see a violet-white glow was coming from the lights in the room, but it didn't appear natural, although Gregory couldn't say for certain. The room itself also seemed to have been abandoned months ago, its forgotten contents coated in a layer of dust and decay. The parking spaces were occupied, but not by vehicles. Instead, each empty spot was filled with an arcade cabinet or a small toddler ride, their plastic forms each long decommissioned, or surprisingly pristine. There was no discernible order in the chaos. Navigating his way through the parking garage, which was thankfully easy because even if the staff bots looked more disturbing, they apparently still hadn't developed object permanence yet. Eventually, he reached the end of the lot. The structure itself was divided into two levels, which made sense. He was certain he was still on the first basement level, and there had to be a way for cars to navigate down here when the place was operational. That made sense, right? To move on, Gregory had to ascend a sloping indoor pathway that looped around to the other side of the room, leading him to the second floor of the parking structure. It was a quiet journey, the oppressive stillness only broken by the faint sounds of the malfunctioning staff bots. Upon reaching the second level, Gregory immediately noticed the contrast between both floors. It was far less cluttered than the level below. No more forklifts or child-sized mechanical rides. Instead, the space was dominated by rows upon rows of bins, each meticulously organized. Inside each bin, the dismembered parts of staff bots. The level of precision was almost clinical. One bin held nothing but left arms, another was filled with rights, a third contained heads, but it was sparse compared to the others. Additional bins were stuffed with wheels, chassis, nuts, bolts, and torsos, all sorted with a purpose. Though Gregory could fathom what that purpose could be. Reaching another doorway, Gregory found it sealed with an electromagnetic lock. But, as luck would have it, the generator to power it was nearby, so there was little concern. Or, at least, there shouldn't have been. The fact that the power system being placed here meant that lock was in place to keep something contained within the other side of that room. Thinking longer and harder about it, the entire layout of the gates, the way they seemed so deliberately placed, gave a distinct impression that they were meant to stop someone, anyone, from venturing deeper into the underbelly of the Pizzaplex. It was as if they were designed to hold back the curious, to prevent them from discovering what had been buried beneath the festering layers of waste, and not keeping what was discarded below from rising to the surface. The adjacent corridor was a small pathway of faded brown brick. A musty, metallic taste lingered in the air, stinging Gregory's senses like licking a copper pipe, and he instinctively grimaced. In the center of the hallway, half buried in the dust, sat a small plushie of Glamrock Freddy, its once vibrant colors dulled by the grime and the passage of time. The sight sent a pang of guilt through him. It was as though Freddy had been waiting for him to make his way back. He was going to make it back to his buddy. He just needed a little more time. As he moved deeper into the corridor, the air seemed to lighten slightly. It was a subtle change, but enough for Gregory to recognize it. He was nearing the surface. He could almost taste the change in the air, the unmistakable scent of faux fresh pizza, marinara, and melted cheese, that familiar aroma from the food venues above. He was somewhere below the kitchen.
I see you.
The sound of her voice slithered through the air, cold and unnerving. Gregory's spine stiffened, his breath catching in his throat. He didn't need to glance over his shoulders to know if she had found him, but caused his legs to stutter before bursting into a full sprint was the unmistakable scraping of metal against the brick wall. She came from the kitchen. There were knives. His legs, trembling at first, responded before his mind could process. With a burst of instinct, he tore down the corridor, his feet pounding against the floor, heart thundering in his chest. Every turn he took, every new path he found, seemed to be obstructed by debris or locked gates. Yet he pushed on, the fear driving him faster, harder. Then came the sound of footfalls. They weren't the light, skittering steps of someone playing with their prey. No, these were heavy, deliberate stomps. She was done toying with him and wanted him dead. Well, feelings are mutual, Vanny. Taking another sharp turn, Gregory found himself no longer on the familiar metal flooring, but instead, dirt beneath his feet as the floor rose upward. A massive internal structure loomed ahead, its framework twisted and unkempt, like something cobbled together from the deepest, forgotten corners of the Pizzaplex. The lights overhead it flickered erratically, casting a chaotic kaleidoscope of colors, yellows, greens, magentas, and blood crimson reds, each hue crafting a psychedelic aura. His pulse hammered in his ears, but there was no turning back. His eyes darted around in a futile search for another way out. There was no clear path forward beyond this bizarre, twisted structure. Instinctively, Gregory bolted toward it. The entrance, strangely enough, was flanked by barn-style doors, in on contrast to the sleek modern mechanisms of the Pizzaplex. But with a grunt of effort, he shoved them open, the creaking hinges sounding far too loud in the oppressive silence. He squeezed through the narrow gap, heart racing, and quickly turned, slamming the door shut behind him. A quick glance to his right, he saw a metal lock bar that could barricade the door. Barbaric security compared to the electromagnetic locks he had previously endured, but more than a welcome sight. Gregory's hands flew to the lock bar as his heart pounded in his chest. With a quick and desperate motion, he slammed it down, the metallic clang reverberating through the air, and at the exact moment, the unmistakable sound of knives scraping against the wood on the other side of the doorframe, echoing through the room. The sickening peal of metal against wood. He held his breath, not daring to make a sound. And then, just when he thought he might suffocate from the tension, a high-pitched, enraged shriek rang out from behind the door. The sound was enough to make Gregory flinch, but it also marked her retreat. The knife stopped. The scraping ceased. Slowly, cautiously, Gregory unlocked his throat and lungs, finally taking in a shaky breath.
Are you having fun yet?
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Gregory hadn't expected Vanessa to find him down here, but he was confident that with all the security parameters he had under his belt, plus the upgrades he could put into Freddy, she wouldn't even have a chance to hurt him. Then again, Freddy had been able to see her back when he had escaped the Superstar daycare. If Vanessa had some tech that rendered her invisible to the animatronics, then Gregory would have to devise a way to level the playing field. As he recalled, all the Glamrock animatronics had undergone experimental upgrades, with Roxy's in particular standing out. Her eyes were equipped with cutting-edge enhancements that allowed her to see far beyond normal capabilities. From the description, Gregory thought it resembled thermal vision, although he couldn't at all put to words what the robotic equivalent of thermal vision, which didn't detect heat but detected robots, worked. He flicked his wrist, scrolling through the parts and service database on his FAS watch, until he found a report detailing Roxy's experimental ocular sensors.
Maintenance report. Roxy's VR augmented ocular system. Report filed by engineering team lead Sebastian.
Right, so the uppers wanted Roxy to see things a bit differently from the rest. It seems they figured she needed an upgrade to give the winners of her go-kart races a tougher challenge. You know, those ones who go on wild tears and spoil the fun for everyone else. So, we ended up using some of that fancy tech left away from that narcissistic World Celebrates You attraction.
That poor girl.
Now, the augmented vision does let her track pathways through the other races more easily, but there have been side effects. She's taken to staring and chatting to the other bots through walls now and then, and guests have started to notice. It's kind of creepy, to be honest. The head of security last, what was her name? Vanessa, right. She filed plenty of complaints to have the upgrades removed. But of course, y'all don't listen to me, so why would you start listening to her, right?
There it was. Confirmation. The only reason Gregory could surmise Vanessa would file so many reports was because Roxy could indeed see her. As head of security, if Vanessa had some method to conceal her actions from the animatronics, and presumably the cameras no longer posed a threat thanks to her position, then Roxy became a loose end that needed to be dealt with. It did beg the question, though, how had Vanessa even landed this job in the first place? Gregory recalled the old joke in the Freddy Fazbear virtual experience storylines that Fazbear Entertainment was so corrupt and incompetent that they could hire a man who looked like a corpse and put him in charge of children's safety. But this was modern Fazbear, an organization that had gone to great lengths to reshape its public image. How could they possibly hire someone so clearly unhinged? Once again, scrolling his Faz watch, Gregory exited the Parsons service databanks and attempted to access the security files. Aside from the occasional report followed by Vanessa, like the break-in that had resulted in stolen Music Man dolls, gee, Gregory wondered, who could have possibly been behind that? There was nothing of significance about her. Maybe he was searching in the wrong place. He left the security databanks and pivoted to the human resources files. Narrowing his search to focus on Vanessa, he soon found a single report, the hiring management document for one Vanessa A.
As requested, here are my notes on today's chief security officer interview. While Vanessa seems eager and bright, she doesn't appear to have any relevant background experience. Look, I realize the recommendation came from the top, but this place needs someone who has run security for a facility of this scale. I do not recommend her for this position.
Well, that certainly explained a few things. Whoever had secured Vanessa's position must have been very high up on the Fazbear corporate ladder. Perhaps her mom or dad. She couldn't have gotten in on merit. According to the hiring manager, she had no notable credentials. The only thing to her name was her role as a beta tester for the Fazbear virtual experience. Gregory supposed that could technically qualify her for security guard position, but still, something didn't sit right. And it wasn't just the unsettling presence behind him. When Gregory had first entered the massive silo, he was so overwhelmed by adrenaline that he barely registered anything beyond its practical purpose, keeping him safe from a knife-wielding maniac. But now, with Vanessa gone, he could finally take in his surroundings. Or, more accurately, register that he was completely surrounded. Staff bot heads, ripped from their bodies, were scattered throughout the silo he was in, each one defaced, with the crude black marker drawings meant to give them twisted mocking grins and hollowed eyes. They piled up in grotesque heaps of decapitated plastic, their vacant eye sockets almost seeming to mimic life, with faint white irises barely visible behind the darkness. Gregory realized with a sickening clarity where all those disassembled staff bot heads from the abandoned garage had ended up. But that wasn't what was setting Gregory's teeth on edge. The entire silo was blanketed from wall to wall and ceiling to floor with multicolored post-it notes, each one bearing bizarre and incoherent sketches drawn with the same black marker that stained the staff bot heads. The drawings were cryptic, like ink blots waiting to be deciphered. Every so often, however, Gregor could make out a word or phrase, disjointed fragments of thought scattered among the chaos. Phrases like, birthday time, pepperon, let get snack, family, and friend with a question mark were scrawled in uneven handwriting, with happy cake and play repeated numerous times on the same notes. The phrases were often accompanied by drawings, distorted, childlike illustrations that offered some semblance of context. There didn't seem to be any clear pattern, but Gregory could surmise that whoever was responsible for these notes was both the writer and the artist. The handwriting resembled that of a toddler, and the picture seemed to serve as a clue to interpret the words. Perhaps the writer was grasping at the words they could remember, drawing what they knew and then attempting to expand on it? Unless Gregory could speak with the author of these notes, he would never know for sure. And deep down in his heart of hearts, he knew he had no interest in that meeting. Turning his attention back to Roxanne Wolfe, Gregory realized the only way to obtain her eyes would be to decommission her, much like he had done with Glamrock Chica. Ideally, he'd make the process more effective and permanent this time, but the reality was that he needed to overpower her to get what he wanted. He'd managed to achieve Chica's beak by exploiting her insatiable appetite, trapping her with a strange chemical slop she just couldn't resist. But Roxy didn't have that same vulnerability. Or did she? While Chica's gluttony had been an obvious weakness, Roxy had been nothing but a frustrated, image-obsessed diva all night. Her irritation was palpable. In the heat of their game of cat and mouse, Roxy destroyed several arcade cabinets near El Chip's in a fit of rage. At one point, she'd even broken down in tears, frustrated by her inability to catch him. Competition could be the bait to draw her into a trap. But to make the trap effective, he needed a way to narrow her focus. With Chica, it had been simple. The kitchen, where the garbage compactor was, played into her natural tendencies. Chica would always feel at home in a kitchen, especially with food nearby. But Roxy, where could he lay the trap for her? It took only a brief moment of concentration, followed by some quick scrolling through the technician notes, for Gregory to realize the obvious solution based on his own reasoning. To trap Roxy, he needed to lure her into a place where she felt completely at home. And what better location than that, than her own go-kart track, Roxy Raceway. It was the perfect plan. You could make noise on the track or alert a nearby security staff bot, drawing her attention. Then, he could take a few laps around the track, just enough to get her frustrated and agitated before she did something reckless. The setup was flawless. But there was one problem. Roxy Raceway itself. The entire attraction was still under construction. Normally, Gregory could simply use his security badges to bypass any security restrictions or access points. But that wouldn't help with a locked gate, especially one secured by an actual lock and key. Freddy was strong, no doubt about it. But Gregory had already come across reports indicating that many of the structures in the Pizzaplex had been reinforced due to Monty's brutish attitude. Wait a second. This could be the very solution he was looking for. The gates had been reinforced because of Monty, but back when he had been fleeing the Pizzaplex before the lockdown, Monty had crashed through a gate with ease. In contrast, Roxy had struggled to tear one down, unable to follow him. Once again, Gregory pulled up his fast watch, searching for the relevant engineering reports. Sure enough, he found another detailing Monty's destructive behavior.
All right, Montgomery's claw upgrades are all set now, and they've done the trick just fine. He's able to play the bass. But his attitude? Well, that's still a bloody mess, thanks to the... The storyteller's influence. Jesus. After performances, he's more inclined to use those claws to tear up company property. And sometimes the staff as well. The fence repairs alone are costing a fortune. And you know what? I'm done sending my crew to deal with it. Let the bloody staff bot lot handle the job from now on. I'm done making my men suffer through that.
Monty's claws. That's how he would be able to break the fences. They must have been sharp enough to cut through metal. The gates blocking entry to Roxy Raceway were reinforced, and staff bot patrols were plentiful. But if you could get Chica's voice box and Monty's claws into Freddy, he might be able to sneak into Roxy's Raceway and set the trap. Of course, that meant staying out of Freddy's sight for a while, despite their homicidal tendencies towards Gregory. Freddy still regarded the glam rock band as his friends. Sure, maybe Vanessa was pulling the strings, or whatever this storyteller the engineer had mentioned was wreaking havoc. But at the end of the day, it was his life or their synthetic mimicry of life. And Gregory was more than happy to sacrifice each and every one of them if it meant he could get out of this death trap. In that regard, it was time for Gregory to get out of this concrete mausoleum of decapitated heads. In the back of the room, he spotted a metal staircase that jutted from the wall, leading to a small platform before continuing upward. As Gregory ascended, the post-it notes that had been so prevalent on the ground floor were just as scattered here, while the chaotic artwork and manic writing often blended together. Even Gregory started to notice that the penmanship on the higher floor was gradually improving. It still appeared to be written by a child far younger than him, and the drawing still reflected that erratic, infantile mindset of a delinquent. But now, the words were more legible. The phrases on the paper began to read clearly. Red, blue, yellow, grown-ups only, home and friends repeated in frantic scribbles. Green, friends only, my friends here, this is my home, friends 1, 2, and 3. Above all, happy, leave, this is my home, leave, the sky, kids, leave. And in the neatest handwriting Gregory had seen, I can feel. The pictures that accompanied these words were as abstract and as nonsensical. Presents, pizza, party hats, houses, cakes, balloons, candles, and dozens, if not hundreds, of smiling faces. Some notes even included what looked like strings of zeros and ones. Was that binary code? Gregory, who had some experience with coding, was surprised to find himself able to decipher what was written. Every paper with binary code had the same phrase. Why is I? What the hell was going on down here? Was this some kind of robotic experiment conducted by Fazbear Entertainment that they had abandoned, leaving it to decay? The basement was filled with wandering zombots, drifting aimlessly with no clear purpose, languishing, waiting for their servos to give out under their weight of years of neglect, eventually crumbling into lifeless heaps of scrap. But what lingered in this part of the facility felt different, like a robot that somehow realized its own awareness, only for that realization to shatter its grip on reality, warping its mind to something abstract and unrecognizable. As Gregory reached the platform, he turned to face the narrow space, only to be confronted by an unsettling sight. The path leading to the next flight of stairs was clear, with light filtering down from above, the distant hum of machinery vibrating in the air. But to his side, nestled in a stretched alcove of the platform, was a grotesque scene. A banquet, of all things, being held by an array of staff bots. These particular bots were deactivated, like the others he'd encountered. but they were largely intact, save for the stains of refuse and age. There were 5 staff bots in total, arranged carefully like dolls at a tea party, creating an eerie resemblance of a family. Each bot was a different variant, clearly chosen by someone who had taken the time to keep them as pristine as they possibly could, treat them almost like cherished possessions in this strange tabloid. At the head of the table was a motherly staff bot, with a pink dress chasset and cotton candy blue plastic hair. To her left was the father figure, or at least what seemed to be one. This bot wore a magician's getup, complete with a black top hat suit and a red bow tie. The attire suggested maturity and a certain gravitas. Perhaps this was the working man of the household, or the figure who held things together. To the right of the mother were 2 other staff bots. The first was an ice cream attendant bot from Bonnie's Bowl. Its red pigtails and the vibrant red dress-like chasset reminded Gregory of Harley Quinn's. Beside her sat another bot, wearing a more masculine yet less professional uniform. Its attire was simpler, more like an older brother figure, or perhaps a younger man in the family, with a Fazbear-colored button-up shirt, suggesting a level of maturity. But the last bot, the one that Gregory's eyes were drawn to the most, was on the opposite side of the older brother from the table, beside the father robot. It was a plain staff bot, but it also was the only one to receive noticeable damage that wasn't attempted to be repaired. Its head was completely torn off, leaving only a hollow metal neck where a face should be. What was this? Was it some kind of shrine? A mural? Flicking on his flashlight beam, Gregory could see a present in the middle of the staff bot family, set up like a grand prize of a family meal waiting to be devoured. Curiosity got the better of him, and he cautiously maneuvered behind the assembled bots, squeezing between the father figure and the decapitated one, intent on getting a closer look. He gingerly lifted the lid off the box, tilting it toward himself with deliberate slowness, as though disturbing the delicate scene might trigger some kind of dormant mechanical fury. He took out his flashlight and shined it inside, his brow furrowing in confusion. Inside the box lay a small, weathered poster, its ink fading, the paper yellowed with age. The ink used to print it was waning off the material and gave it that leathery look that time didn't take kind to. The poster itself was an advertisement for... Wait, this wasn't right. The character on the poster was clearly Freddy, albeit a bit more yellow in hue compared to how he recognized him. He looked more realistic too, like an actual depiction of a bear, but he still had the trademark black top hat and bow tie. He was holding onto one of those old receiver phones with the spiraling cord, which made sense. He glanced at the text of the poster. The advertisement was for pizza delivery, a concept that seemed fitting enough for Fazbear Entertainment. But the store wasn't called Freddy Fazbear's, or Freddy Fazbear's Pizza, or Fazbear Entertainment. Instead, it was an advertisement for Fredbear's Family Diner. As he tilted the poster further to examine it, his eyes caught a smudged copyright date. 1983. Gregory carefully placed the box back where he had found it, and slowly extricated himself from the unsettling scene. In all his time spent navigating the chaos of the Pizzaplex, he had encountered a bizarre assortment of sights, some of them crazy, others terrifying, and even a few that were both thrilling and terrifying in equal measure. But this felt different. It wasn't merely strange or frightening. It felt confidential. Not in the sense of a corporate secret, but in a far more uncomfortable way. Like he had stumbled upon something he was never meant to see. Something that had been deliberately concealed from him and the world. It was as if he had unintentionally pierced the veil of some destroyed knowledge, getting access to a truth he wasn't supposed to know. Without another glance at the lifeless family of staff bots, Gregory spun on his heel and raced toward the exit, his heart pounding. He refused to let his gaze linger, unwilling to risk making eye contact with the unsettling tabloid any longer. Into the Night will be right back after these messages. Before we wrap up for tonight, I think it's worth delving into the curious scene involving the robotic family in the staff bot silo that Gregory encounters. In a typical playthrough of Security Breach, this area doesn't get much emphasis. It's clearly visible, yet the game doesn't draw much attention to it, and Gregory doesn't even comment on what he's seen. So what exactly is the significance of this peculiar mural? This arrangement seems to be an intentional representation of the Afton family. The father figure, William, is symbolized by the affluent business-suited staff bot adorned with a top hat, which mirrors his own status and his obsession with power. The magician archetype could also be a subtle nod to his involvement and affluency with the supernatural. The mother figure, his wife, is embodied by the motherly staff bot, which reveals the traditional matriarchal role. The colors and design of this bot also seem reminiscent of Ballora, a character from Sister Locator that represents his wife he once had. Next, we have the ice cream attendant bot, a clear allusion to Circus Baby, which symbolizes Elizabeth Afton. The decapitated staff bot is a particularly poignant symbol, representing the crying child. The tragic nature of this figure, its head crushed by the bite of 83, is reinforced by the poster found among the family, which is a subtle nod to the bite, only strengthening the interpretation and connection. Finally, Michael Afton, the last remaining family member, is represented by a staff bot in a standard Fazbear employee uniform. While a security staff bot might seem like a more fitting choice for Michael, the use of this specific bot makes sense when you consider Michael varied his roles throughout the series, from working as an engineer in Sister Location to taking on an entrepreneurial role in Pizzeria Simulator. The choice of this robot reflects the multiple jobs he took on beyond just being a night guard. The answer to what this scene represents is undoubtedly clear, and the creation of this unsettling scene seems equally transparent from its position in the staff bot silo. However, the deeper questions that remain was why this particular depiction was chosen, and who was behind it. While the answers are not immediately obvious, there is a strong sense that this has to do with something with the mimic. The chaotic, manic scribblings on the colored post-it notes are not unique to the scene in Security Breach. A similar scene, marked by frantic black marker scrawls, appears in Tales from the Pizzaplex, specifically in the novella we'd covered, The Storyteller. In the part 2 of that story we covered in the podcast, we learn that Mr. Burroughs, the CEO of Fazbear Entertainment, discovers his rival, Edwin Murray, died within the confines of the Storyteller tree. As Edwin passed, he communicated to a form of the mimic that had taken on the appearance of a tiger, relaying his final words using colored paper and a black marker. So we know the mimic is involved in some capacity in the creation of the mess in the staff bot silo. Perhaps this is even the trunk of the Storyteller tree itself. It's possible. But why the Afton family mural? And why create it deep below ground? Is it implying that the mimic is down in the underbelly of the Pizzaplex? And if so, in what form? These are questions that I, unfortunately, do not have the answers to at the moment, nor am I comfortable presenting a theory for at the time. We will just have to save it for the wrap-up episode on Security Breach, once our story with Gregory is concluded. And with all that said, I think we have found the perfect stopping point for tonight's program of Into the Night. Thank you so much for listening. Please consider subscribing, following, or sharing this podcast. It truly helps us broaden our reach. Consider following us on our Twitter at Fazbear Podcast, joining our Discord, or supporting us on our Patreon or merch store using the various links in the description of this episode. I have been your host, Nick Black, and I would like to thank you all once again for listening. Have a good night, and drive home safe.
Alright, here's my advice to the uppers. Bin this experiment and stick the old voice box back in her already. Who cares if she sounds like a valley girl? At least she wasn't shattering eardrums and making robots' heads explode. Not to mention, I kinda got a thing for the valley girls. Wait, is this thing still on? Terminate connection already, terminate!
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.